Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and once again, Kerry Pierce is with us. Kerry is a sales production manager for Provident, and he's been involved over his lifetime of being involved in loans and about $1.5 billion in closings as a production person and also a manager. Kerry, welcome back.
Thank you.
You know, one of the things we just started talking about was, you know, trying to qualify somebody for being a buyer. And, you know, it's one thing when a loan doesn't close for somebody that's, you know, let's say the lender. But when you're an investor and you have a hard money loan and you're making a payment at 12% interest and it falls out, there's a real hurt there.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things you'd like not to have too many dry runs unless you happen to be in a pretty bull market where you go, okay, it's no big deal. I can, you know, I'm going to make it up in price rises.
Right.
We haven't had the luxury of that for a while.
No.
So we just started talking about some of it. You know, because unemployment has been such a big factor, how long does somebody have to be on a job to get the lender to say, okay?
Generally, for most any loan, they want to see a two-year work history.
Wow.
Yeah. And there are some exceptions where FHA, if you have a college student who's gotten the four-year degree in a particular, you know, field, and they go out and get a job in that field where you can do it with less. I mean, in some cases, we've done it with just, you know, 30 days of pay stubs. But a conventional loan, that would never fly. They definitely want to see a two-year work history.
So the idea that improved employment would immediately help the real estate market, that's really not true. That's going to have a big lag effect.
Yeah. And there's some people that where they, you know, had a two-year work history and now they've been laid off for a year and they're 1 month back on the job wanting to buy a house, that won't fly either. You know, our people want them to be back on the job for at least a year.
Now, when you say our people, that's an overlay or that's
an overlay
FHA?
At Provident, yeah.
Okay. Now, but overlays are everywhere.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we're not the only one
exactly.
That has that. I mean, there may be some, well, there are some out there that still underwrite FHA's 4155. They still do what they call a manual approval where it doesn't have to go through the automated system. But most of the lenders, I would say probably 80%, are doing everything automated and they have the overlays where they want the minimum FICO scores and the employment and all of those things.
Okay. As far as being self-employed, what are my chances?
Same situation, 2 years, and it's going to be 2 years average of net income off the tax return.
Off the tax returns.
Right.
Okay. So usually people, you know, try to be aggressive in their deductions, and that doesn't work so well nowadays.
Unfortunately, that's the biggest problem with self-employed borrower, and that's why we would love to see the stated income loan come back for them because of the fact that they write off a lot.
Yeah, and it's all legal. It's just that that's the nature of how they haven't structured it like a paycheck through a C-Corp. They're just self-employed.
Right.
Down payment required by FHA, there was some talk about it increasing. Is it still, what is it, 3.5?
It's still 3.5. We're hearing rumors that they're trying to get it to go up to 5%, but I don't know if they'll pass that or not.
Okay. Is that part of Dodd-Frank?
I don't think it was part of Dodd-Frank, but it's just some of the stuff that's going around FHA right now. They're saying that they're financially in dire straits and they've got to make changes. And this is one of the things they're talking about to try to, you know, make their program a little more stable.
Huh. I don't know how down payment helps their financial. Maybe safer paper, but that's not very much safer.
I think that's what they're looking at is overall foreclosure ratios with the higher skin in the game, you know, less chance of default, that kind of thing.
I don't know if you've ever seen a chart of that. The safest loan in the country for, say, the last 50 years is a VA nothing down loan.
Wow.
Down payment has nothing to do with it at all.
Wow.
You couldn't tell a VA loan from a Fannie 20% down.
Holy cow.
Yeah, so that's complete nonsense. We were able to present in front of Fannie and Freddie in Washington, D.C. and pointed that out with that chart. They were going, whoa. So all this nonsense about Dodd-Frank being, the big saver for the mortgage industry, it's really nonsense. Whatever VA does must be good enough for the underwriting process.
Yeah.
So,
and I mean, obviously their percentage is not as high as FHA's or Fannie or Freddie, but, you know, they're still doing a fair share of loans. So
yeah, it's the percentage. It's not the number of foreclosures historically. And so it's the nothing down borrower with whatever they're doing as far as underwriting apparently produces a pretty successful loan.
Yeah, because they do scrutinize that package. It's going to be full doc. They have to meet the ratios. So, you know, it is a quality loan.
Yeah. cash reserves for an occupant buyer, like an FHA buyer going to live in the house?
Technically, FHA doesn't have a reserve requirement.
Okay.
So, you know, we've plugged some in where they have $500 left over after all their down payment and costs, and it'll still approve it.
Okay.
And if it does, you're okay. Now, there are some exceptions and investor overlays that come into play. For instance, if a seller or a buyer is going to keep their current home, they already own a home, and they're going to keep that as a rental, and now they want to buy a new primary residence. In that situation, the overlays come in, and they want them to have at least a couple months reserves on both houses.
Okay.
And then conventionally, it's even worse. In that same example, they want them to have 6 months reserves for every property they own plus the new property.
Right. What about property condition? Have there been inspections now that are really not so critical?
We're still seeing repairs on a lot of our FHA appraisals, not so much on conventional. FHA flips are probably the worst, I would say, only because you have to have two appraisals, you have to have a home inspection, and the underwriter, after reviewing the home inspection, will add any and all health and safety items to the appraisal as repair items. So typically those come in with more repairs, but the funny thing is, those are usually the cleanest houses in the market.
Of course. What's the theory behind two appraisals, and does the right one win or the low one win?
The low one wins. Yeah, unfortunately.
I already knew the answer to that, but why is the low one always right? I'm just curious. I mean, that just seems so ridiculous.
It boggles the mind because we order an FHA case number, and you would think that that FHA appraisal should be the go-to value, but the second backup appraisal is typically ordered conventionally, and if it comes in lower, that's the number they're going to go with. And that's an overlay. You know, I mean, there are some people out there that on the flips can still get it done with one appraisal, but most of us that are doing the flips have to have two if it's less than 90 days.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just, it's insulting, actually. If I was an appraiser, I'd go, come on, why do I even have this license if you can't trust the number?
Right.
It's pretty frustrating. What about down payment gift programs? Any of those exist anymore?
Most of those died. The Nehemiah and Hart and some of the others that were out there all went away just because it was seller driven, so they knew the money was coming from the seller and the market just didn't like it.
Yeah. What are there still a fair amount of gifts that are actually coming from relatives now?
We do see a lot of gifts.
Okay.
On our FHA loans, I would say probably 30-40% of them have gift funds.
Okay. And what percentage of loans would you say were multi-generational or multi-family actually qualifying where they're going to live together?
Not a whole lot. I mean, it's a small percentage, but they're out there.
Okay.
Now, there are some other down payment programs, such as CalHFA has a program called CHDAP, where they do a 3% silent second, and that's still a very popular program, and it helps a lot of first-time buyers as long as they can meet the income limit.
What about fourplex limits? Do you have those off the top of your head by any chance?
If you can bear with me 1 second, I can get them for you.
In Orange County, I know it's like 1.4 million. That's a pretty exciting number.
Actually, for a fourplex, 1.2, a little over 1.2.
1.2 in Riverside County.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, that's Orange County.
Oh, that's Orange County.
For a
okay.
Fourplex, and this is conventional, Fannie Mae, it's a little over 1.2.
Okay.
And FHA Orange County is 1.4, like you said.
Okay. And that's still with 3.5% down right now?
No, on the multi-units 3 and 4, they do a special calculation to make sure that the debt service is going to make the, you know, so you have to go through this extra procedure and run all the numbers to see if it'll still qualify for the 3.5% down. But there are some cases where it will.
Okay. Is the deals that you are seeing come through, are they most of the time purchases or refis?
Last year, our percentages went way up. Typically, our branch runs at least 70% purchase to 30% refi.
Okay.
And we've been higher than that. We've been 80-20. This last year, though, we dipped. We were probably 55-60% purchase.
Okay.
With a higher concentration of refis, but only because rates were so low.
Yeah, they were refining stuff that was 4.
Right.
Okay. You know, it occurred to me there's not going to be much of a refi market once we leave this era.
Right, because everybody, why will they, who would touch a 3.25% mortgage?
Right.
They'll never touch it.
You'll just keep it as a rental or something and just leave it alone. How sensitive do you think due on sale clauses will be? You know, it's certainly a very attractive niche to say, okay, well, I'm going to sell this property and just wrap it.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, there are no assumable loans anymore. So,
right.
You know, the FHAs, you have to, basically it's a due on sale situation. Now, a VA loan has a clause where, you know, if another veteran's coming in, you can swap the entitlements and they can take it over as long as they qualify. But that's one of the few exceptions. But as to whether the lenders will actually exercise that due on sale, if somebody does take it over and start making the payment, who knows?
Yeah, it's usually pretty rare.
You know, I mean, if they're making the payments on time, they may not ever touch it. But, you know, they could.
Yeah. Do you get a sense about where prices are headed over the last 6 months?
As far as our local market?
Yeah, local market.
I mean, definitely up. You and I talked about that where, you know, the appreciation is definitely going to be, hopefully, at least 10%, maybe more. And we need it because Riverside was down 40, 50%.
Oh, yeah. No, it's very easy to get. That's what's interesting about the reticence of saying we're going to have a price increase, but they forget, I think, that they're pairing it with a 3.25% or 3.5% mortgage rate.
Right.
You know, you start calculating how much the price movement means per month, and it just disappears. It's like, oh, does that really matter?
Well, in the height of the market, there were 2-bedroom, 1-bath homes in the Wood Streets going for over $400,000.
Right.
And what are they today? Maybe 220?
Yeah, they're still closing in on half. But the interest rates, when you're talking about back then, if they had to get a fix, was probably 5.5.
Right.
So you start looking at the payment difference, it's just night and day.
Right.
So that's why when it goes from 200 to 260, which is, it seems like a big move up, when you take 60 grand and pair it with 3.25% mortgage, you just go, huh.
Yeah, it's a piece of cake.
No big deal.
People are, yeah, hey, I can handle that. No problem.
Exactly. Any concern for the industry on the direction? You know, the lending world's getting hit and blamed, and maybe some of it deservedly so. New York seems to have pretty much skated by, but the changes that could be enacted by Dodd-Frank, qualified residential mortgage, any of that?
The biggest thorn in our side because of the Dodd-Frank was the whole appraisal process. We used to be able to pick any appraiser in our local market and have him do the appraisal. And today, we have to go through a panel, and as a loan officer, we have no say-so in who gets that appraisal order. It goes to our corporate office, then they randomly assign it out to someone, and once the appraisal comes in is when we find out who got the order.
Yeah, and what's interesting is there's not really the same I wouldn't say there's too much due diligence on the quality. I think it might come down to, can you do it faster and cheaper?
Yeah, when we were at National City, we went for a short time through one of these national appraisal companies, I think it was called StreetLinks, and we would get some really low appraisals because these guys were just trying to churn and burn and get the reports back and didn't really throw a lot of concern about the comps, and it was because they were only getting half the fee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was a huge problem.
Yeah, of course it's a problem. I mean, there's only so much due diligence you can do for $200.
Right. And luckily, Providence philosophy is they pay the appraiser the full fee, and there is a management company that's involved, but they only get $25 just to help us through the ordering process. But the appraisers do get a high quality report, and, you know, we're not seeing nearly the low appraisals that we used to see.
Okay. Well, that's good. Do you see any evidence of lenders loosening standards yet?
Not yet.
Not yet? Okay.
Now, like I said about stated income, you know, that's a program that we would love to see come back, but it's not on the horizon that we know of.
And was that always a conventional product that was outside of Fannie Freddie?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, mainly the SNLs, like World Savings was very popular with that, Downey, a few of the others. But we had broker relationships with them and obviously sent them that type of loan.
How do changes in loan policies usually take place? I mean, who's the deciding body that says, okay, well, that'll be okay now?
Is it
the money? In other words,
Wall Street, pretty much.
Yeah,
whatever they're willing to buy. And, you know, my experience when I was with Home 123, who was owned by New Century, this is kind of an example of how fast things change. New Century was closing $4 billion a month in mostly subprime loans. And our A-paper division was maybe 10, 20% of the overall volume.
Mm-hmm.
And in somewhere around late 06, early 07, when they took $8 billion to market and Wall Street said, we're not buying it. And they were out of business in 2 weeks. Done.
I remember some of those early news flashes or, you know, news articles. And I remember one news article said, well, we basically have gone back two decades in loan programs in 10 minutes.
Yeah, it was so fast. It was amazing how quickly the program started dropping off. I immediately left Home 123 because I was forced out when they told us we couldn't fund loans, and then they told us we couldn't originate new loans. We had to go elsewhere.
Right.
And we took our whole team to National City, and slowly but surely they started pulling back all the programs. They had construction financing, and they took that off the table. They had home equity lines. That dropped off really quick. And then the alternate A products where you had a lot of jumbo loans and the no ratios and those kind of things, those quickly got pulled. So pretty much got back to full dock on everything.
Yeah, and I'd probably the lenders or the people working for the lenders probably had never even done one.
No.
So that was completely...
The speed of which all that happened was a matter of just a few months, and it just was amazing how many programs died.
Now, coming back to today, if I'm an investor and I'm trying to get a loan, what programs are out there, Fannie and Freddie? How do they differ?
Fannie and Freddie, typically you're looking at least 20% down to do a non-owner occupied loan, but Fannie and Freddie both have their standard program where you can only have up to 4 finance properties, and that has to include the subject you're trying to buy. But there is an overlay where they will go up to 10, and with that program you have to have 25% down, and you have to have heavy reserves for all your properties, but they will let you go up to 10 finance properties on that one.
And is that both now, Fannie and Freddie?
I'm not sure exactly who we're selling them to. It might be Freddie. I don't remember. You know, corporate doesn't really clue us in on that kind of thing. But
I think it actually is just one, and I think it is Freddie.
Yeah, but the sad thing, which you and I found out, is that they won't do cash out refis on that.
Right.
You know, at least Provident doesn't have it. I checked around with a couple sources that are in the industry, and they both told me, no, their program will do only purchase and rate and terms as well. So luckily for you, we found a source out in Orange County. So hopefully all goes well there.
Yeah. What's interesting is, you know, you wonder, okay, cash out refi from a free and clear property. It's just odd how yes answers, either come about or don't come about in the lending world right now. You know, you just look at the reasoning behind some of the programs, and you just go, well, you're really missing a lot of very safe loans just because you can't do them.
Right. And the investors definitely would help the market come back. There's so many of them out there.
Yeah, that's a lot of the purchases are not just – it's not just the Wall Street crowd, you know, buying them by the gazillions. It's the local investor who's, you know, really forced to write a check and then hopefully get his money back. If they do, in fact – just buy a property and want to get their money back, is it okay if it's 1-4 loans, or is it?
Right. We have a program for that where they call it the delayed financing program, where, like, you as an investor, you come in and you pay cash and you immediately want to pull some of that cash back. They'll go up to, I think it's 70%. On a cash out on a property that's been owned less than 6 months. But you have to document where your down payment came from. It had to be your own money. It couldn't have been any gift. So there are some restrictions to it. But
okay.
But there is a program out there for that.
And if you have a credit line, let's say, on your residence, even if it's unused, that counts as one?
Yes.
Okay. And does it, let's say it's unused, does somehow the maximum amount you could borrow against it, even though you haven't, is counted against you as well?
Yep. So if you have a $450,000 equity line and you've got zero owed against it, they're going to count the $450,000 against you as if you owed it all, because they know that you could go out and write a check tomorrow for that whole amount.
Right. Yeah. It just, you know, they keep – it is amazing. They try to make it very difficult. Okay. I want the 11th loan.
Yeah.
does that world exist yet?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. And I think you're right. I think the only thing you can do is you could probably go to a commercial local bank and get a line, or you know, maybe have a loan with a short fuse.
Right.
You know, I don't know.
Now, there are some investors out there who have their own equity lines at their banks and are able to go out and do whatever they want.
Yeah, that gets renewed every year.
A selective relationship.
Right, but it still has to be renewed every year.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's... Well, that's a whole different thing. If you want to hold rental properties, that's not necessarily going to work. The
right.
problem with those programs, too, is they can grow out of favor.
Right.
That was my first experience when I had a credit line. It was just, you know, it wasn't a big deal. I had a 200 grand credit line, And we basically used it just to buy trust deeds and the margin, the difference in interest, you know, something we earned. But at the end of the renewal, it wasn't renewed. And I said, well, why not? And she had nothing to do with you. Your whole industry is out of favor.
Right.
I thought, wow, okay.
Right. I mean, you're a perfect borrower, perfect credit. You managed it very well. It didn't matter. It just pulled.
Right. It just, your industry is batting zero this
right.
year.
We had clients that had same exact situation where no balance on their equity lines, and they got notices in the mail, we're closing your line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a bad day, because there's sometimes that cushion is your cushion. So
right.
you have that 400 grand line for a reason. In case something happens, you can float a boat for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they eliminate the boat. That's not good.
No lifeboat.
When I have a rental property and I'm getting $1,000 a month and it's free and clear, let's say, what percentage of that income actually gets credited to my side of the table? Is there a certain percentage they're assuming goes to expenses when they're qualifying?
In the old days, we used to take 75% of the gross rent and use minus out anything, you know, any payment that you had, and then the excess was used as income. But today, Fannie Mae, and I, again, this is probably an overlay at Provident, but we have a chart we have to go through where we take your tax returns for the last 2 years, whatever your bottom line income or loss was, we start adding back depreciation, the mortgage interest paid, tax and insurance, and then out of all of that, after a two-year average, we deduct the PITI payment, and then if there's a positive, it'll count towards income, and if it's a negative, it counts as a debt.
Okay.
So the old rule kind of went out the window, and in most cases, when we look at somebody's tax returns, it hurts them. It's almost twice as bad.
Huh. They could even have a positive cash flow and have a negative net result.
Right.
Okay. That makes sense. What about trustees' income? Because, you know, I just went through this, and I had one of the reasons why, as I recall in some guidelines a long time ago, that if you have a short-term trustee that's 1 year or less,
right. They won't use it if it has to have 3 years life left on it.
Okay.
36 months.
But if you do have a 1 year trust deed, it's not only not income, is it an asset? Do they consider it cash?
Well, they should at least count it as an asset.
Oh, I
but
know.
They won't count it as income.
Do they count it as cash?
But actually, no, they won't count it as cash.
Okay.
Yeah. So I know.
It's sort of like
it doesn't make a lot of sense.
An asset class with no home.
Right.
Okay. Now, VA lending to investors, that's only if they buy a VA property?
Right, yeah, we don't do anything non-owner VA personally at Provident, but and I'm not aware, like you said, it might be on their own inventory that they would allow that.
Yeah, that's it.
On the REOs, but nothing else. Obviously, any new buyer coming in trying to buy VA has to be owner-occupied.
Okay. How about self-employed and investor? Is that really a bad word?
No, we see a few out there. I mean, you know, there are a lot of companies out there where they're showing the strong bottom line net and they're fine.
Okay.
But, you know, the challenge with probably 70% of self-employed borrowers is they write off too much and then it hurts them when they go to qualify for anything.
If I have a property that's, you know, I purchase it, but it has a pretty strong negative cash flow, that's not in itself going to end my loan app. It's just a ratio of everything else I have.
Right. It just, as long as you ratio out, fine, you're okay. You know, and we have had some situations where, you know, the payment might be $1,500, fair market rent's only $12, and we can only use 75% of that $1,200. So you've got $900 to offset the $15. You got now a $600 loss on paper that's going to go against you in the debt ratio.
Okay. About a minute left. Selling immediately after rehabbing. What are the guidelines now as far as conventional NFHA, if it's under, you know, a certain period of time?
What? Less than 90 days, we can still get them done conventionally and FHA. Conventional, they usually will require an appraisal and at least a field review just to make sure that the value is solid. FHA, if it's less than 90 days, Provident's overlay is we have to have two full appraisals and a home inspection to, one, check the value, and two, make sure that, you know, the house is in good condition.
And are they looking at, let's have a rehab estimate or things like that, and are they looking at margin of profit?
There are some rules when it comes to the profit that fall into the overlay. You know, if it's over 100%, they're really going to scrutinize it.
Sure. Boy, we would like to have that number.
Right.
Kerry, thank you so much for taking time today. Kerry's direct number again, 951-256-3715, and I've known Kerry for a long time.
Kerry, thank you, Bruce.
Thanks for taking your time.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.